actually broadcasting live from an office in downtown St. Helena, Scale Wine Group. And my guest today is Desi Echevarri.
I'm going to do about a, you did an 8.5 on the pronunciation of my last name. I'm going to try for a 9.5. So my name is Des Echevarri. Des is short for Desmond.
Where's that from?
Desmond is a very Irish name. So my mother's family is Irish. Echevarri has, it's a very old Basque name. And so the original last name is Echevarri, but it's been Spanglicized, Francicized, and Anglicized.
So you're a blend of Irish and
Irish and Basque
in Spanish.
Yeah, yeah. I have a car bomb in my trunk, actually. It's half Irish, half Basque. And I can drink anybody under the table. But the great thing is that, you know, nobody actually pronounces my name correctly. And so by virtue of that, I, you know, everybody pronounces it correctly. Because, you know, there has to be a consensus. Otherwise, it doesn't, you know, doesn't work.
Early on, like in college, I had a therapist who asked me my name. It was like a test. And I was like, it's John, Jonathan. She was like, well, which is it? And she's like, is it Jonathan or is it John? Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. She was like, well, you better figure it out. So
sounds like a good therapist.
I mean, really. There was a big shift after that. Everything we figured out, I needed to be Jonathan. I had to be Jonathan. If you called me John, as my mother-in-law does, not great.
Yeah. And that's how you got into wine. You're like, if I'm going to be Jonathan, I better drink wine because that's something Jonathan would do. John doesn't drink wine. He drinks beer.
If somebody mispronounces your name, do you allow it to happen?
Of course.
You don't correct them?
No, because I find it infinitely funny, the different iterations. And it really plays into my schizophrenia. I can be so many different people all at once just by different people trying to pronounce my last name. It's great.
So this is a segment called In the News.
Okay.
Let's go to Wine Spectator. Let's see what the headlines are. And then let's talk about it. Okay.
I love it.
It's January 21st. So it's a day after the end of the U.S. Republic as we know it, depending on what
fall
side.
Rome.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. It's fine. We're all, in the words of Garrison Keillor, who was also caught up in the Me Too movement, we're all Republicans now.
I mean, why not?
That's what he said. So here's what's really important in Wine Spectator's world today. Latest headline, Los Angeles restaurants grapple with wildfires.
Okay.
Surgeon General opts for simple slogans over solid science. Well, that's a good one.
Well, that's an easy one. Obviously, slogans are way more effective than science. Just all you have to do is go to Madison Avenue and realize that. Like, science, schmience.
Dr. Vivek Murphy joined a growing neo-prohibitionist campaign. That's what they say. They're right. We're actually dealing with this. This is a moment where all of a sudden wine causes cancer label might be slapped on bottles. What do you think about that?
I think that's insane. And look, I am not a scientist. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, look, there's a million things that can kill you. And what I have heard anecdotally from friends that are oncologists, right, cancer doctors, is that there is a fraction of a percentage increase if you drink alcohol on certain types of cancer. Now, I don't know if that is a higher percentage increase than what could, you know, potentially impact your body from like microplastics, right, or seed oils, or God knows that, any other sort of thing. So I think,
or not recycling.
Right, not recycling, not composting. And those people are evil.
I agree. Those people are everywhere. I was just talking to my wife about this. Like, sometimes we feel like we live on a lonely planet of just like a few people that do that. And everybody else is getting away with murder here. But I think what you're getting at, and I completely agree with you, is the idea that all things in moderation. But what's most important is that these studies that are coming out right now that we're sort of dealing with are, you have to look at the studies. You have to look at what the data is that is being assessed by the reporter that's reporting on these studies. And we could spend an entire podcast talking about this, but the reality is there's a few people at the New York Times that have been leaning into this, and really the health columns should be opinion columns as opposed to like real solid science, because they're skewing the argument that they're taking is data from old studies, and they're skewing it, and they're not giving us the full picture. And wine is getting lumped into this category, which is absolutely ridiculous. What we're really talking about here is people who abuse alcohol on a regular basis, and like very hardcore abusers who participate in these studies. And so, but also that when they are like, oh, we have an idea, let's give mice a bunch of alcohol for like a really long time, and let's see what happens to them.
That sounds like a fun Friday night.
Right. Well, and that's what Dr. Vivek Murphy has subscribed to. So it's unfortunate for
them. Yeah, I just think that, look, is it potentially, you know, plausible that they gleaned some evidence that, you know, abuse of alcohol can increase your risk of cancer or certain cancers? Sure. Okay. I'm not going to deny that. And as a not a scientist, I have no way to deny that. I do feel, though, that they're not really portraying the entire picture, because I also know that, you know, you go talk to a cardiologist and they'll say, look, a small amount of wine that in moderation, you know, it's actually helpful. And regardless of any of that, think about the amount of stress that is relieved in our modern world by drinking alcohol. And I would say it's twofold. It's not just the actual effects of alcohol on our body to release stress and inhibition.
I think it's a great point that all the health issues and all the health related concerns aside, there is something really great about what a glass of wine does in terms of bringing people together. It's an icebreaker.
Yeah, no, it's social courage. You know, it helps grease the wheels of social connection. But here's the other thing. I think if there was no such thing as a hangover, we'd all be drinking a lot more. But I think also as you age, and I'm starting to realize this in my own life, in my own experience, you are less indestructible, and the hangover is much more of a formidable opponent on Sunday morning. And you start to finally learn as you age and gain a little modicum of wisdom that moderation is really the key. So I think for me, and trying to stay healthy and trying to, you know, meet certain fitness and health goals in my, you know, back half, right, of life, I'm really like trying to figure out, okay, well, how can I, you know, enjoy my time on the weekends, or, you know, times when I'm in a social setting, and really go for it and enjoy wine. But then the rest of the week, I have to, you know,
rein it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. It in. Yeah. But it's about balance.
It's about balance. 100%.
Period. You know, and if you don't understand what that means, shame on you. There it is. I'm just going to put that out there to the people listening.
It only took me 40 years to figure that out.
Yeah. So if you're in your 20s, you don't understand balance.
Yeah.
Just but keep,
I also,
just keep going.
I signed up for this life, and at a very tender age, 20 years old, I lied on my resume.
Oh my God.
To get a sommelier job. And I did it principally because sommeliers drink great wine for free, basically. And,
oh yeah.
And make a somewhat of a living out of it. And so that was my, you know, that was my deal, man. That was my MO for a long time. And I was like, hey, I want to drink this. I want to drink that. I remember very vividly Raj Parr, great American sommelier, once said to me, Des, it is the prerogative of the sommelier to taste everything in sight. And I heeded those words with great enthusiasm.
And you're still fit. You're very fit. What do you weigh?
I'm about 170 pounds.
Jesus, God, I wish I used to be.
I'm also 5'1", so that's, you know, that's part of the issue.
Okay.
No, just kidding.
And so you did. I think you have tasted everything. If I were to guess, I would imagine that you've tasted just about everything. And now champagne, you ended up, I mean, you love champagne.
I do enjoy champagne. I do.
Wait, though, because I don't want to get off this wonderful segment of what's in the news. I want to come back to champagne, okay. But this is so appropriate.
All right.
Because
let's go back.
Eric Asimov at the New York Times, uh-huh. Who has been so... his articles have just been so informative and so front and center and just like really important, has a, in the last where has he been for the last 3 years? Has a piece out on the Pour called that says restaurant wine lists are getting much shorter. Subhead, in an effort to engage their customers with wine, restaurants are trying friendlier, less intimidating ways to present their selections. Now, I haven't read the article, but as somebody who has worked the floor at some pretty cool places, like the French Laundry in Yountville, which is a three Michelin star restaurant owned by Thomas Keller. What do you think about that headline?
I think that restaurants are just, a lot of them, first of all, are struggling to survive. If you look at what's happening in certain markets, independent restaurants are having a tough go at it. And I also think that in a post-COVID world, restaurants have realized that holding a lot of wine inventory, like, you know, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, of wine inventory is not a great business model. It may be, at one point, it added to the prestige of the restaurant. But for most restaurants, it's not necessarily a great business model.
You're talking very fine dining restaurants?
Not necessarily.
No.
Because I do think that the fine dining restaurants are timeless, right? And the ones that are well-established and have an amazing wine program, amazing service, and three Michelin stars, they're not changing a thing. Those are destination restaurants that really need to continue to innovate in terms of the culinary program, but they are destination iconic places. They're culinary pilgrimages for those that are, you know, really enthusiastic about that type of service. But for your everyday diner, I think most people just want something, you know, an experience where the food is ingredient driven and there's something nice to drink. And they're not demanding the breadth of wine lists that perhaps diners were interested in seeing 20 years ago.
Now that's interesting.
And so I think it's fine. I think as long as, here's my thing. It doesn't matter the size of the wine list. It matters. Size doesn't matter.
Okay. All right.
When it comes to a wine list, not true. It always matters. Magnums only.
For okay? Wine Spectator.
Yeah. Award. Everything else is just a half bottle.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Yeah. Every program needs to be really thoughtful. It doesn't have to be huge. It just has to be thoughtful.
Oh my God. Can you come to Marin County where I live?
I will never go there.
And say this to all the people who make
there's
these
no good
very
food
short
there,
wine.
As you've
there's,
mentioned, there's so no I won't be there.
And there's no good wine.
We can go mountain biking. That's it. I know the Trek rep in Marin County.
We can go. That's right. We can go. There's a winery biking called Trek in Nevada. We can start there.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I would love to, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, so two things on this.
Okay.
And I think this is a really important topic and I'm glad you brought it up and I'm glad it was in the news.
I don't think I did. I think you brought it up, but go on.
So wine lists don't need to be, you know, 100 pages long. They can be one page, but jam-packed, and you have to read it with a magnifying glass. There's so many selections on there. I like to see that, actually. It's kind of fun. But what I really love is when wine directors or general managers or whoever the person is in charge of the wine program realizes that they're making more dollars by reducing their margins in terms of a markup on the wine list. And so, you know, obviously a lot of restaurants subscribe to a model of, you know, 3+ time markup. And for some restaurants, maybe that's a great strategy. But I think to get people engaged with great wines again, it's really important to have a more approachable markup. And the other thing that's interesting is, you know, we all have these devices and this instant connectivity to technology and the price of absolutely everything on the planet in within seconds
phones.
At our fingertips.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Phones. Right. So I think it's important that, you know, restaurants take into consideration the, you know, average retail price and don't have a markup on their list that is, you know, multiples of that, because that does feel like price gouging. And I think consumers are much more savvy than they were even perhaps, you know, 5-10 years ago.
I think everything that you said in this last little bit was interesting. And I was kind of listening. So I hope all everybody else
have some more champagne from, because the more champagne you drink, the more interesting I am.
I'll have some, more.
Yeah.
We have, tell us what we have, and then I have a really profound question for you.
So this is the Champagne Collard Picard Essential 2012 vintage from two areas in Champagne, the Grand Cru Village of Les Manils sur Auge. So this is 50% Chardonnay from Les Manils in the Côte de Blanc. And then it's 50% of red grapes coming from the Valle de la Marne in the village of Villers-sous-Châtillon.
I really think the most important thing is that it's $200 a bottle.
Well, the most important thing is it's 2012 vintage, and it spent 10 years on the lees.
Vintage. What does that mean? Because, you know, it's so funny when I'm like, oh, have you had the, you know, I bring a bottle, I bring a nice bottle to a house, and it's like, have you had the 2021? They're like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, the 2021 vintage of this wine. Yeah. Like, oh, there's years on the bottle.
Yeah. And it's a calendar year based on the Gregorian calendar.
Wait, so how do we help consumers understand that the numbers on the bottle mean a year? And what does that mean? How can that help them? What can they learn or take away from those numbers?
I think people that are really kind of getting into wine and learning a little bit about wine, but maybe don't have a lot of knowledge. And first of all, the most important thing is, you know, do you like wine? Do you enjoy wine? Is it intriguing to you? Do you want to drink more of it? Do you enjoy the human connection that you have with your friends when you drink wine together? If you're there, then yeah, absolutely. It's great to explore the world of wine. And the most important part of that is never to be intimidated by the world of wine, because the reality is you can spend half a lifetime studying wine, and believe me, I have, and still never be an expert. The world of wine is just far too vast. So when you're thinking about some of the more fundamental components of what goes into a wine and the wine label, the vintage actually denotes the year that those grapes were harvested. So every year only brings one harvest. And of course, wine is made from grapes. Grape vines produce only one vintage or one harvest each year. And so unlike something like beer that can be made many, many times over in a year, wine can only be made once.
Get one shot.
It's almost like a time capsule. Mm-hmm. I think of every bottle of wine as a living, breathing time capsule. And that wine is going to evolve and change. Mm. And
music.
It's going to...
Do you hear that, people? That is music to my ears. And it should be music to your ears. You need to think about that. When the next time you have a glass of wine in your hand, don't just put it in and sip it and say that it smells fruity. Think about the year that wine came from. And you know, if you really are thoughtful, you'll
learn all the bad vintages.
You learn all the bad vintages. But if you're a parent, you'll buy a wine from the year your kid was born.
That's right.
So that you can share that wine with
when they get married.
Yeah, when they get married. And like, it doesn't matter if it's a bad vintage. You know, there's good and bad vintages.
Yeah, because invariably your kid's going to pick someone bad. So
yeah, exactly.
It's not going to matter.
Exactly. So if you have a really giant bottle of wine from that vintage, it's going to make the wedding day like a little bit easier.
Yeah, and you hand it to their spouse and be like, here you go.
Okay.
Finally getting rid of this.
You import wine. Scale Wine Group is a place that imports wine from like other places that is not the United States of America.
Yes.
Okay. So like France.
France.
Italy?
Not Italy.
Spain?
France.
France.
Yeah, mainly just France.
Okay. So like
sometimes also France.
Okay, every once in a while France, and sometimes maybe Italy if you're thinking about it.
I would love to import wine from Italy, but you know the reality is I don't know.
Oh, what do you have? Something against Italians?
No, I love Italian wines. I just don't think of myself as being worthy.
Okay.
That's the God's honest truth.
That's a good save.
I'm worthy of
because I'm
being able to
Cristaldi, you know?
Yeah.
Sicilian.
I grew up in a Sicilian restaurant.
Did you really?
Yeah. I'm not. Everyone asks me if I'm Italian. I said, no, but nobody's perfect. And the reality is that the Sicilian culture is just amazing. It's like none other. But we're not going to go into that.
We're very poor.
We're poor in dollars, but rich in culture and red sauce.
That's right. That's right. An eggplant. Let me ask you a very serious question. What is the worst wine you've ever imported?
Ooh, I don't know if I want to answer that.
You can do it.
I have imported a wine that was...
You don't have to name names.
Spectacular.
You can describe
it. It was not from France. It was actually from Germany.
Interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, we won't talk about that.
What's the best wine you've ever imported?
I mean, the best wine I've ever imported is probably sitting right here. It's this C17. So this is the Cuvée 17 from Champagne. It's a blend of all 17 Grand Cru villages, and it's pretty extraordinary. The organization or nonprofit organization, marketing organization that produces this is called the Grand Cru d'Exception de Champagne, essentially the great growers of Champagne in the best villages. So in the region of Champagne, there are 319 villages. Of those 319, only 17 are considered Grand Cru. Hmm. And within those Grand Cru, there's only one representative of in this organization of each of the Grand Cru. And they get together collectively and decide one day during the harvest when they will all converge at the domain of Monsieur Julien Lanois of Champagne-Paul-Lanois. They all bring 600 kilograms of grapes, and they all throw the grapes into the press together at the same time. And they do one pressing of Chardonnay and Pinot Noir from all 17 Grand Cru villages simultaneously. And that wine is then aged for 5+ years. I think in this case, 5 years on the lees, 5 or 6 years on the lees. And then they only bottle magnums.
So it costs like $10,000 a bottle?
No, not quite that much. In Marin County, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
This is...
I'm willing to pay that much.
Yeah, this is like, I think, $600 a bottle for Magnum.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Cheaper than Harlan.
Yeah. But this is pretty cool. We got 24 bottles, 24 Magnums for the entire country.
That's cool.
Yeah.
When are you going to open that?
After you leave.
Is there a sound or a noise that you really can't stand?
You ever watch Dumb and Dumber?
Oh yeah, I grew up.
You know that. You know that sound? Like he's like, like that's really bad. Yeah. That's other than that, fun. I love all sounds.
Are you reading any books right now?
I don't read.
Do you read books? Yeah, I was. You're not the. I feel like you're not the reading type.
You know what I love? I do. No, I do read a little bit once in a while, but I'm reading a book called Influence, which is interesting. I got like 3-4 pages in,
and
it's not really swaying me. I listen to podcasts just constantly. So I love The Rest is History. Yeah, I like history. I like to listen to audible books.
Books on tape.
Yeah. Especially historical books. It's like a bedtime story with violence and gore. It's great.
Is there one that you've listened to recently that had an impact on you?
Well, I've listened to an entire series that they did on the Aztec and the Mayan Empire and Aztec Empire. Hmm. And it was very, very interesting.
What sticks out in your mind is like a thing that you remember?
They did one. Okay, so they did one on Hernan Cortez and talking about that history. And
it's a really positive history, right?
Oh, yeah, really.
Super uplifting. Right?
Good vibes all around. Uh-huh. And then I listened to one recently on the saga of Horatio Nelson, the famous British sea captain who defeated Napoleon in Egypt and had all these, you know, almost Homeristic travels and just amazing figure in history. So, yeah, I like history.
I like that.
There was a series, a TV series, I think it became, but it was a series of novels called Master and Commander.
I'm going to take that. Jonathan Cristaldi, world's most powerful wine critic, Master and Commander.
I think that's a great title for you.
Yeah.
Master and Commander.
Yeah.
I'm a lowly master sommelier, but you, sir, are Master and Commander.
Iron Horse makes a wine called Commander's Palace. It's a sparkling wine.
Seems like that's a...
I'm gonna sue them,
New Orleans,
now for like infringing on my idea of being the commanding wine critic. We're gonna take a commercial break, and then when we come back, we're gonna keep talking. We'll be right back.
Ken, tell them about our after Christmas sales.
At Al Reuben's, our prices are lower than a Broad Street subway. So come to Al Reuben's, home of the low, ho, ho prices.
Buy the Sharp VHS 8-hour front-loading VCR for just $398. A 19-inch RCA with electronic tuning for just $268. This 25-inch Magnavox console for $438. For the guaranteed lowest prices, Al Reuben Appliances, Allegheny Exit of I-95, and in Wyoming. So you won't be ashamed of yourself.
So let's move on to our segment that I like to call Drink It, Cellar It, Pour It Down the Drain. Okay. So I name a wine, and then you tell me if you want to drink it, cellar it, or pour it down the drain.
Okay.
Easy, right?
Easy.
Easy. Okay. So let's start with Screaming Eagle.
Drink it.
How about 100 Acre the Ark?
Cellar it.
Camus.
Give it away.
That wasn't an option.
Cellar it.
Stop it. Oh, people are going, what, why? What is that all about?
Why don't you drink it?
Stand.
It's delicious. Okay. Yummy.
How about Meiomi Pinot Noir?
Dump it down the drain.
Good answer. How about,
what's the vintage? Because the vintage matters as you.
You're right.
So eloquently.
2025 vintage release.
Oh, yeah. Dump that down the drain.
Because I think that's the current release.
It's from the Southern Hemisphere. Because it's only January.
That's exactly right. All right. That was fun. Do you have any questions for me?
Yeah. Why did you decide to move to Marin?
Wow. Well, as I've already told,
I'm just kidding.
The millions of people listening.
I'm just jealous. I have FOMO. I wish I could live in Marin. Just don't have that kind of money.
Well, but that's actually a great point. You should see my tax bill. It's insane. And I try to explain this to Decanter all the time, but that's just something we'll get into another time.
You talk to your glassware?
I love the glassware that I polish it. I keep it fresh.
Okay, so that's my question. What is your favorite type of stem? What's your favorite type of wine glass?
Let's see. What do we have here? This is a Sofenwald.
Sofienwald.
That's what they thought.
From Austria.
I'm sure. I'm so Austrian. That's my impression.
That was your dog impression?
Yeah.
It's a German Shepherd.
I think of... Waiting for Guffman.
There's
a scene in Waiting for Guffman where
I love that.
Where Corky Sinclair is imitating Germans. That's my impression of him doing that.
Very good.
Like I'm
impressed.
That.
Yeah.
And here's what I'll do.
Do you do community theater in Marin?
Used to.
You could.
In Marin they haven't discovered me yet.
Well, that's their fault.
I'm not going to auditions. They got to find me.
Right.
So I'll answer your question.
They will find you now after this.
I hope so. I've like bashed Marin mommies the whole time in my entire Marin community, but they
is that
know
how they're
I'm
saying
joking.
It now? Bashed? That's the new thing.
Yeah, well, there's this. I'm going to answer your question about glassware in the voice of Jiminy Glick.
Oh my God, I love Martin. Remember? Short.
Yeah, Martin Short, exactly. So I really appreciate this question about glassware, and I actually do really love glassware. I have a bunch of it at home. I think it's very important, and for the most part, I like something heavy, very dense, and sort of obtuse, and that will relieve a pressure point. I have a lot of tension in my shoulders, and so I love filling it to the brim. A big heavy Jean-Charles Boisset. Do you know him?
I do know him very well.
He's a good friend.
I'm not surprised.
He and I go dancing with Nancy Pelosi.
That's got to be a hoot.
Can you imagine me in pirouette with Nancy?
Sadly, yes.
Yeah, Jean-Charles has a big-ass glass that's a crystal goblet, and I fill it to the brim and fill
it's called
it.
A pimp cup.
It's a whole bottle of wine fits into that thing, and it just, boy, it works out the kinks. It works out the knots in my shoulders.
You know what I think? Actually, you should do all of your tasting notes, you should read all of them and record them in Jiminy Glick.
Now that's an idea.
You absolutely should. And that is going to be, I mean, I would listen to every single one of them. Even Mayomi Pinot Noir. I would listen to every single one of them.
Cool. What do you think about this whole health and wellness stuff? We talked about it earlier.
I think it's all bonus. We kind
of touched upon it.
It's a slogan. There's no science behind it.
I mean, nobody really. What? I mean.
I do rub my body several times a week in CBD oil. But other than that, I don't believe in it.
We used to drink like milk and eat steak like all the time. That was like the 1960s.
I never did. Mainly because I'm lactose intolerant and grew up poor.
Did you grow up poor?
Not super poor, but.
But like how poor?
I mean.
Like on a scale from 1 to 10, you know, 1 being me. I grew up poor. And 10 being.
Well, what's your scale? I have no idea. Background.
I just started making, you're Sicilian, I just making that so. Up. I grew up in a trailer park.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We lived in a double wide.
I lived in an apartment.
Where?
In a
what town?
Suburb.
Of what town?
Phoenix.
Arizona?
Yeah. A little town called Fountain Hills.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, like, what kind of food did you have growing up?
Not steak.
Yeah.
It was, basic food. Cereal, ramen, hot dogs.
Would you eat hot dogs raw?
Well, no hot dogs are raw.
The Oscar
You ever
Meyer...
get a hot dog stuck in a toaster? That's a bitch. I'm going to tell you, man.
No.
But ramen, they don't fit in the toaster, so that wouldn't happen. But you.
Ramen.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even have known what ramen was until I was 18. We used to.
We're very international growing up.
Had a I used to eat bologna.
Asian food influence.
Okay. Jesus. I'm See, this kidding. Is all exotic to me. I wouldn't have understood.
You had bologna it. Sandwiches.
I just ate bologna and like uncooked hot dogs.
You know what's funny? I was always lactose intolerant. And one of my biggest character flaws is that I can't eat cheese. Being in the wine business, it's hard to not eat cheese. But I loved Kraft macaroni and cheese when I was a kid. And I never understood it. Like, how can I eat macaroni and cheese? And I have, the minute I have a piece of like American cheddar, government cheddar, right? Like, I'm going to the toilet. I don't understand this. And I'm like a kid, right? Like 5, 6 years old, 7 years old. And then as a grown-up, I realized, oh, that's just hydrogenated oils. There was absolutely no dairy in that mac and cheese.
Not in the least.
Yeah.
How many people know that?
You're the only one I've ever told that to.
Yeah. I believe
because
that.
It's not really that interesting.
No, but it is. I actually had this conversation at the farmer's market. There's the best farmer's market in the world is at the Civic Center Farmer's Market in Marin County.
It is true. I love that farmer's market.
Yeah. And I was talking to this guy who I really love with Tamales Bay Creamery, and his name is Jacob. And I was saying, I was told by this health person that I really got to cut back on the cow's milk. And he was like, oh, well, let's talk about this. He was like, I'm lactose intolerant, but Strauss Creamery uses this – he's like, Jersey cows. What do you know about Jersey cows? I was like, well, I know to avoid Jersey drivers.
Right.
I don't know anything about Jersey cows. Their milk has something to do with this A2 strain. And there's something about this A2 strain that makes it very digestible and easy. And he was like, so I can eat this. And so this might change your life. Maybe I need
to
introduce
you. I'm going
to
have to go check that out.
Yeah. Apparently Strauss ice cream is also made with this A2 strain of cream. And so it makes that ice cream a little bit more digestible.
You just added 5 pounds. So I mean, to rescind my previous answer. It's 175
there
pounds.
There it is. There it is.
You literally just added weight to my, yeah.
All right.
Believe in health and wellness.
Is there anything I didn't ask you today that you really want to talk about?
So I think that it's just really fun that we get to, have a little chat. And I will say this. I'm a big fan of yours, and I am excited for your pod, and I'm excited for Cristaldi's Crush. And I think it's really cool what you're doing. And the thing that I love about it most is that there's so much pretense oftentimes in the wine business. And there's so many people who try to make wine exclusive. And I absolutely hate that. I think wine should be inclusive. I think it should be approachable. I think it should be fun. I mean, at the end of the day, wine is just liquid microbial waste that gets us tipsy. And if you don't think of it like that, you're like overthinking it and you're making it, too dear. And I love that it's just like a lot of fun. And I think that you know, you're doing a great thing. So
I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I want to end on a very positive and uplifting note. Okay. So, it's the day you're going to die.
Right.
What do you drink? You know, you're going to die today. What do you open?
I mean, honestly, I would drink. Okay, this is both a great champagne, but it's also one that has meaning to me. When I asked my wife to marry me and be my, you know, partner in life, I opened a bottle of 2004 Salon champagne. And there's really great memories surrounding that moment. And for me, I've always loved Blanc de Blanc champagne. And we import a lot of really beautiful Blanc de Blanc champagne. But if it was like my last day on earth and I knew it, I'd be like, yeah, I'm gonna open some Salon, because that's it holds a special place in my heart. And I would hope that I could share it with her. And when our child was born, this is a little, you know, a little weird to say, but we opened a bottle of Salon champagne and we, you know, put a few drops on our kid's forehead.
Mm.
And yeah, I'm a big fan of Salon.
Baptism by Salon.
By Salon. I also grew up in a Salon because my mom was a hairdresser.
Wait, okay.
Non sequitur.
I'm stealing that. I'm not having any more kids, but like, I'm going to.
You could.
I'm going to take that.
Remember, you're the chosen one.
I mean, I know. You don't have to tell me. That was Desi Escher.
Perfect.
Yeah. Of Scale Wine Group. If you're interested in the things that they do, you can go to their website, which is
scalewine.com.
And, you know, I mean, I think
we're also on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Where's that?
At Scale Wine.
I think that's fine. Follow them if you want.
You don't have to.
It's no pressure.
Don't do it for Jonathan.
Nope.
The big JC over here, he's not going to pressure you into it. I mean, if you don't, you know, it's still fine. He won't give you dirty looks on the mean streets.
Oh, I'll give him dirty looks. I like a dirty lick. I think
I love it when you've had so much champagne that you can't form proper words, like four letter words anymore.
We need to
just end it.
I need to go home.
Yeah.
That's our show. I'm all Jonathan right. Cristaldi. You've been listening to Cristaldi's Crush. Follow me at Jay Cristaldi on Instagram, where you'll find links to everything else I do and details on upcoming shows, reports, reviews, ratings, and more. Subscribe to our show at CristaldiandCo.com. Thanks for subscribing and listening. And remember,
I've got a crush on you.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, I sure did.